Pull out your Bibles and turn to Matthew chapter 16. Matthew chapter 16. As Daryl mentioned in his prayer, it's so good to see Jill and the Coxes with us this morning. Certainly was a blessing. Put a smile on our face. Keep in mind those who are on their way to Honduras, we don't know exactly where they're at on the journey. We just know it's been difficult. Should have left last night. Not all of them got to leave. Some left from Birmingham. Some had to drive from Atlanta. It's been quite the challenge, but they are on their way, Lord willing, and continue to pray for their good week. And certainly appreciate the prayers for Rob Rogers. In Matthew chapter 16, Jesus asked the disciples, "Who do men say that I am?" And they say, "Well, some say that you're Elijah." He says, "But who do you say that I am?" And Peter says, "You're the Son of God." And Jesus responds to Peter and says that on that statement, he's going to build the kingdom. That is the truth, that the foundation, that Peter, the disciples, will be the foundation next to the cornerstone of Jesus that the kingdom will be built on. What is interesting is almost immediately following Peter's confession, Jesus starts in verse 21. It says, "From that time on, Jesus began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things from the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed. And on the third day be raised. And Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him, saying, 'Far be it from you, Lord, this shall never happen to you.' But he turned and said to Peter, 'Get behind me, Satan. You're a hindrance to me, for you're not setting your mind on the things of God, but the things of men.'" Interesting that Peter goes from identifying Jesus as the Son of God, declaring his power and authority as God's Son, to rebuking him. And he goes from being this foundational rock to being called Satan. Within a matter of moments of our reading, so closely together. And then, starting in verse 24, after he tells Peter, "You're not thinking about spiritual things. You're being worldly. You're being fleshly. You're being carnal-minded. You're thinking about things of man." It says, "Then Jesus said to the disciples, 'If anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. Whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever will lose his life for my sake will find it. For what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and forfeits his soul? What shall a man give in return for his soul? For the Son of Man is going to come with his angels in the glory of his Father, and then he will repay each person according to what he has done. Truly I say to you, there are some standing here who will not taste death until they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom." Jesus says here essentially, you're going to have to choose who you're going to be. What I want you to see this morning is that what Jesus does in these verses we've read is he gives them two choices, two paths that they can choose. And the first of those, he says, listen, you can choose the path of self-preservation if that's what you'd like to do. As Sam read in the call to worship this morning, that is the path that we are accustomed to. That's what we're used to. All of us are good at surviving. At least that's what we call it in our minds. We're good at self-preservation. We're good at choosing the things that I want. I think that's partially innate and partially an acquired trait. I think there's a part of us that are just born to adapt and do what we have to do to stay alive. But there's also a part of us that has been told all of our life that if you want something in life, you're the one who's responsible for getting it. We say things like, "You got to look out for number one." Or, "I'm going to have to take care of myself, nobody else is." "You can't trust anybody. Got to live your life." This idea of self-preservation is not the survival to live, but rather the pursuit of winning at all things for all cost. This is the idea of more. I want more. I have things I want in life. It's not really life preservation. It's the idea of climbing the ladders of esteem and reputation and power and wealth. Making sure you are the Joneses, in other words, that everybody wants to keep up with. Jesus said you can do that if you want. If you do that, the first thing you do is you live for yourself. In verse 25, whoever will save his life will lose it. Who loses his life for my sake will find it. There are a lot of biblical characters, by the way, who decided to live for self. Starting in, really, Genesis 4, Cain lived for self when he killed his brother Abel. 2 Samuel 11, David lived for self when he committed adultery and really raped Bathsheba. Ahab and Jezebel lived for themselves in 1 Kings 21. How about Haman in the story of Esther, preserving himself, his power, his heritage? How about King Herod in Matthew 2, who declares all of the children should be, all the boys will be put to death. Why? To preserve his throne. How about Judas Iscariot? He chose himself. Each one of those individuals made choices in their life based on what was best for them. And in the process, they ignored the needs of God and the needs of others. Living for self means you really don't care about anybody else. And it's often at the expense of other people. I'm going to tell you, sometimes you can find out how selfish you are in the smallest of ways. You ever try to beat somebody to the 10 items or less line at Publix? You ever get frustrated that you're behind somebody at the store who has a whole cart full of things and you've got one item? How about when you get on the interstate or 280? You turn into an amateur NASCAR driver who has to pass everybody and run people off the road to get to where you're at? You ever sat at a red light angry for how long the red light is? Because it's your turn? While those things seem trivial, you know what's the heart of all of those things? I have things I have to do. My life is more important. Nobody else matters in those situations. That's what living for self looks like. Secondly, the path of self-preservation means that you ignore the cross. In verse 24, the one in verse 24, which we'll look at in a minute, he'll take up his cross and follow. But this individual does not. In fact, when you are so consumed with yourself, you will walk right by the cross of Jesus Christ and not even acknowledge what it represents or that it's there. And that's understandable because the reality is, if you're only thinking about your wants and your desires and yourself, you don't care about the cross. Why did Peter get reprimanded by Jesus? Because Peter refused to believe in the need for a cross in Jesus. That'll never happen to you. Peter, your mind's in the wrong place. You're not thinking about things of God. You're thinking about things of man. You're thinking about yourself. What you want. When we live in a first world mindset, meaning all we care about is the flesh, what it causes is for us to ignore the cross of Jesus Christ. Thirdly, you will follow the world. Now, again, this isn't stated, but in verse 26, if you choose this path, you will gain the whole world. Why? You're following after the world. It's interesting to me that we should think in this passage, by the way, when Jesus talks about gaining the whole world, my mind goes back to Matthew chapter 4 and verses 8 through 10. They're in the third temptation of Jesus by Satan himself, where Satan takes him to a high mountain and shows him all the kingdoms of the world and their glory in verse 8. And in verse 9, he says, all these I will give you if you will fall down and worship me. I will give you the entire world, Satan says to Jesus. By the way, remember that he is called the ruler of this world. He had the power to do so. I will give you the whole world if you will just follow me now. Satan says, be gone. You shall worship the Lord your God, and him only shall you serve. Do you realize that for most of us, even though we're here this morning, we are still tuned into winning the world, as it were? How many of you are worried about your retirement right now? Your stocks, your funds. How many of you are frustrated by inflation? I mean, I am. I filled up the truck yesterday. It cost me $125. That's a sign to park that animal. You realize that's just worldly stuff. If I'm living with the right mentality, my retirement plan doesn't have anything to do with the stock market. Because I want to be in heaven for eternity with God. We get so in tune with the idea of success and fame and reputation and career and education, all of those things. And I'm not saying they're bad, but if we're not careful, they become idols that are nothing more than us following after the things of the world. They are just matters of self-preservation, but they are self-preservation of the flesh. And Jesus says, if you do that now, you will save your life for your own sake. What he says in verse 25. You can secure a full life here if you want to. By the way, this idea of saving your life is not salvation. It's really the idea of security. You can secure your own life here. One person explained it this way, that this is the idea of attaining to what one considers a richer, happier life and puts forth every effort to save or rescue himself, to cling to that by every means possible. This American dream we have, that we've all been pursuing since we were a young child, that we were trained to pursue. If we're not careful, that becomes our focus. We want to secure and save that, rescue that, make sure we have that, and we'll do that with whatever it takes. And if you do that, you can save that life if you want. You make that your focus, you can achieve it. Now, I want you to notice that it's for your own sake. You're not thinking about anybody else in this regard, Jesus says. This is a selfish decision here. You're not considering anyone else. And by the way, Jesus does point out there's some rewards to this. First, you're going to gain the whole world. I mean, if you pursue the world, you can gain the whole world in that sense. That's what Satan promised Jesus in Matthew 4. We can have that if we will just serve him, just like he promised to Jesus. You turn your life over, away from God. You turn away from God, preserve yourself, and end up serving Satan in the process. You can gain the whole world. Secondly, that means you forfeited your soul. And we use the word lose, but some translations use the word forfeit, and that's really what it is. We willingly forfeit. When I was coaching, I hated having to do a forfeit worse than losing, right? Because a forfeit means people didn't even care enough to show up. And that's the idea here. You don't even care enough about any of this. All you care about is yourself and gaining what you want, and you're forfeiting because you don't even care about your soul. You're sacrificing it willingly. And third, you'll lose out on Christ's reward and his glory. Verse 27, notice that here. For the Son of Man is going to come with his angels in the glory of his Father, and he will pay each person according to what he has done. You're going to receive a reward. It's going to be more of a consequence if you choose this path. And Jesus is saying here, after Peter confesses who he is and then says, but you're not going to do that. Peter, you got to choose who you are. You got to decide where your mind's going to be. Is it going to be on spiritual things? Are you going to be a disciple or are you going to be a man? This idea of self-preservation could also be described as just being fleshly. Just being an ordinary human at this point. Or Jesus says, you can choose the path of self-denial, which is a much harder path. Let's be honest, we do not like telling ourselves no. And that's true regardless of anything. We don't like denying ourselves of pleasure and opportunity and power. We don't like saying no to any of those things. Jesus says, if you want to choose this path, the first thing you've got to do is deny yourself. Let me be clear. Denying yourself here, self-denial in this text, does not mean abuse of yourself or a lack of self-esteem or some sort of false humility where you look down upon yourself or where you make yourself feel less than others. That's not what this is. This is renouncing who you used to be. It is willingly sacrificing your old identity and your old habits, maybe even your old friendships, your old desires, your old interests. Anything that is a conflict between your old life and service to King Jesus, you deny yourself those things. You give them up. You get rid of them. Sometimes that's painful. Jesus said, if your right arm offends you, cut it off and throw it away from you. In order to fully follow Jesus, that may be what's required. Radical surgery, cutting things out of your life. Things that you have grown up with all of your life. Yet you have to dispose of those. Denying yourself means that you no longer are seeking your own interest, but now you are consumed with the cause of promoting the glory of God in every area of your life. That first song we sang is really Paul's description of this process. I've been crucified with Christ, nevertheless I live, yet not I, but Christ lives in me. I die so Jesus can live in me. I am no longer that person I used to be. Once you do that, Jesus says, then you've got to take up your cross in verse 24. It's the second time, by the way, Jesus has made this statement in Matthew 10 and verse 38. Whoever does not take his cross and follow me is not worthy of me. By the way, sometimes people misunderstand what this means. You ever heard somebody go, well, that's just my cross to bear? You ever heard anybody say that statement before? Like you met somebody who suffers from some kind of disorder or disease, or maybe they've got some kind of thing in their past that's a form of suffering, it's a burden, and they go, well, that's just my cross to bear. Somebody has asthma, for instance. Well, asthma is just my cross to bear. That is not what this is talking about. This taking up your cross is not enduring asthma. It's not carrying your personal burdens. Taking up your cross means that you identify with Jesus and his cross and you're willing to suffer the way Jesus suffered. You're willing to be rejected You're willing to be harmed for your faith. You're willing to even die. You endure the shame. You endure the pain and the persecution for Jesus. That's what taking up your cross means. I will just tell you that when people don't even know what we believe, where we worship, what we practice, when our friends and neighbors aren't aware of our spiritual life, when we've kept it tucked away on Sunday morning and Wednesday night in this nice little tidy place, we've not been taking up our cross. I know to some degree we live in a culture, a society that claims to be Christian, but let me remind you that what the world around us claims is, quote, Christian, is not the same that what we believe this faith mandates of us as disciples to follow Jesus. This kind of discipleship where you carry your cross is not a kind of discipleship that just shows up on Sunday morning for church. It's a conviction that lives 24/7. Conviction that means it is your greatest passion. I'm going to tell you what. Everybody that knows me knows which sports team in college I root for. And that's okay. But if in the process of that, I give them the impression that my greatest passion in life is the orange team out of Knoxville, and that's a greater passion than my service to King Jesus, I have failed in taking up my cross. Third, when you take up your cross, you follow Christ. And this is kind of the point. What Jesus is defining here is a follower for us. And we're going to talk more about that in a moment. But the reality is, it is His cross you pick up, so you follow Him. I know it says it's our cross, but it's the cross we share with Him. That cross of shame and suffering. It's as if Jesus is saying, if anyone wishes to be a disciple of mine, he must once and for all say farewell to himself and decisively accept pain, shame, and persecution for my sake and my cause and follow me. Fourth, you do this and you will lose your life for His sake. You lose your life for His sake. How much suffering will you endure for Christ? How much suffering are you willing to endure for Christ? Would you die for your faith? I want you to think of it this way. I'm not going to ask you to raise your hands. Would you die for your faith? If you believe that's yes, then ask yourself this question. Would you share that same faith with your neighbor this week? You know what is interesting to me is a lot of times Christians will tell me emphatically, yes, I will die for my faith. But then you ask them to talk to somebody about Jesus. I don't know if I can do that. How is it we think we would die for our faith when we won't even share it with people around us? This person loves the Lord and wants all the things the Lord wants and loves all of those the Lord loves, and in the process of doing that is willing to suffer even to the extreme of death. That's what it means to lose your life for His sake. I can give you some people in Scripture to think about who did that. Jonathan, who loved David so much, he was willing to risk his life with his own father. Or how about the Good Samaritan? Or how about Epaphroditus or Onesiphorus or Paul? All of these individuals willing to put their life on the line. Some of them suffering. How about Stephen? Some of them even suffering death, Why? Because they took up their cross, they followed Jesus, and they lost their life for his sake. Some through death, some through sacrificing things in their life and giving up things to serve Christ. But all of them did so willingly. Next, you forsake the world. Instead of following the world, you forsake the world. Part of self-denial is choosing to turn your back on the world and what the world deems important and tells you you should pursue. And saying, no, I will not do those things. In Colossians chapter 3, when Paul talks about this transition from the old man to the new man, which fits into what we're talking about this morning, he says in verses 1 and 2, if you've been raised with Christ, seek the things that are above where Christ is. Verse 2, set your mind on things that are above, not on things that are on the earth. If you are raised with Christ, if you are a disciple, if you have picked up that cross and followed after him, if you've been obedient, then you put your mind on things that are not earthly. You think about spiritual things. Heavenly things. And he goes on to tell us what the rewards are. He says, you do this, you'll keep your soul. You'll save it. Please understand that this path is the only one that ends up in salvation. Why? Because of what it says in verse 27. Because by doing this, you receive his reward and his glory. Why? Because your salvation is achieved not by you trying to save your life, but you giving up yourself and allowing Jesus to save your life for you. Don't put your focus on winning the world. That always ends in destruction. Instead of that, let Jesus take care of securing your reward and your soul on your behalf. Put your faith in him. The question comes, when you think about it, these are your two choices. Here's your choices. And listen, they're exactly parallel. You can live for yourself or you can deny yourself. You can ignore the cross or take up your cross. You can follow the world or you can follow Jesus. You can save your life for your own sake or lose your life for his sake. You can gain the world or you can forsake the world. You can lose your soul or keep your soul. You can lose his reward and glory or you can gain his reward and glory. When you look at it that way, it doesn't seem that difficult to choose, does it? And yet it is. Why? Why is it so hard for people to follow Jesus? I wonder if sometimes we don't look at discipleship through our Western eyes and see it as less than what it really is. I'll illustrate this way. When you go through the Gospels, you see at times thousands of people following Jesus, don't you? I mean, he feeds 5,000 men with a boy's lunch one time. That means there's thousands of people following him. Just that one story. But after Jesus' death and resurrection, Acts begins with 120. Multitudes followed Jesus. Called him rabbi, great teacher. Listened to what he had done. Watched him perform signs. 120 are still there at the end. What that tells you is that after the resurrection, until the beginning of the kingdom there and the church establishing that in Acts 2, there were only 120 people who were willing to deny themselves and carry the cross of Jesus. Because it requires great sacrifice. Here's the truth. As we've been going through this series about Follow Me, here's the one truth you have to understand. Following Jesus is hard. It is much harder than putting some bumper sticker on your car or wearing some shirt that says, I love Jesus, or telling people you're a Christian, or carrying a Bible, or showing up to church when the doors are open. Actually being a follower of Jesus Christ who steps in his footsteps and follows him with a cross on your back, it is hard work. This is John said in his talk about the Lord's Supper, sometimes I just don't want to deny myself. Sometimes I just want to feed the flesh. I want to give Terry what Terry wants. I want to feel good. I want to be happy in this life. I want to say no. I want to be selfish. I want to take care of old number one. For to this you've been called, because Christ suffered for you, leaving you an example so we could follow in his suffering, so that you might follow in his steps. Christ suffered, leaving us an example so we could suffer like he did. Peter even says here, walking like Jesus includes suffering. We don't talk to people about our faith because we don't want to suffer. We don't want to suffer the rejection. We don't want to suffer them mocking us for what we believe. That's just one example of many times that we make this choice. You are being called, though, to follow Jesus. One of my favorite authors is N.T. Wright. I just like the way he says things, and I read things that he writes sometimes, and I go, man, I wish I could have come up with that. I think Joe feels the same way sometimes. And so rather than try to express this idea, I'm just going to use his words. The call goes out to follow Jesus, a call which rings down the centuries like a great bell in a distant church, calling us from whatever we're doing. Imagine the bell echoing through the streets of your town. Pick up your cross and follow me. Pick up your cross and follow me. Imagine its sound resonating through shops and offices, through schoolrooms and hospital wards, through bustling tenements and lonely apartments. Pick up your cross and follow me. Imagine people coming out of their doors to see where this noise is coming from, to listen to this great bell. And there, walking ahead of them, is Jesus, a compelling and mysterious figure saying, pick up your cross and follow me. Jesus is calling us to pick up our cross and to follow him. But here's something you've got to know that he makes sure you know before you do that. This call, if you answer it, is going to cost you everything. It requires you to give up everything, to changing everything about yourself, to truly selling out who you are, sacrificing your life, sacrificing friendships, sacrificing behaviors, sacrificing desires, sacrificing your identity. Our problem is we want to cling to those things because that's who I am. And we feel like if we give those things up in this answer to the call to discipleship, we're going to die. We're going to lose our identity. We're no longer going to exist. I have to hold on to that. It was Wright that used this example of learning to swim. He says you could walk on your bottom of the pool, and because of your fear of dying, you keep your foot on the bottom of the pool. Now, if you do that, you are safe. You will not drown. But you know what else? You will never swim with your feet on the bottom of the pool. And you keep walking, and as the pool gets deeper and the water gets deeper, eventually you come to a point where you have to make a choice. Are you going to trust the safety of walking on the bottom of the pool so you don't drown But if you keep doing that, you're going to drown. That's when you're faced with this choice to lift your foot up and to trust the process in something other than yourself and what you know, or to keep your foot on the bottom of the pool to the point you die, because you're going to save your life by keeping your feet grounded. That's what discipleship is. You're going to trust Jesus enough to lift your foot up off the bottom of the pool and stop clinging to your life and risk everything so that He can save you and glorify you and give you His reward. If anyone would come after me, let him deny himself, take his cross, and follow me. For whoever would save his life will lose it. Whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. Have you decided to follow Jesus? This song is so simplistic, but it's a commitment. Can you sing it? You sing it with the meaning it's intended. If so, then let's sing out. And if not, then change your life and become His disciple through obedience to the gospel. Do that now while we stand and while we sing together.